In the beginning, the Spirit hovered over the face of the waters. So it says in that very first creation story of ours, that biblical story, in the beginning, the Spirit hovered over the face of the deep. There isn't just one story in the Bible, there are many. Many creation stories. Each one refers to the one that came before, expands, weaves, further explanation, and almost always in poetry. Whether it's a biblical story or a First Nation story or even a scientific story, we find usually that writers about creation speak in poetry. Neil deGrasse Tyson is one of the modern scientists that we find best able to explain science to lay people. And he says, we are part of this universe. We are in this universe. But perhaps more important than both of these facts is that the universe is in us. Even in science, we have to use poetry to describe the vastness and wonder. The majesty and splendor and wonder and incomprehensible size of the universe leaves us speechless. And in trying to describe its beauty and terrible vastness, in trying to describe our place in it, we can only turn to poetry and to metaphor. So when ancient Hebrews tried to write about the spirit that enlivens the universe, about wisdom, in the book of Proverbs, the story rolls back and forth between very down-to-earth teachings about how to plant and reap and raise a family, and then to a wisdom that's beyond us. The book of Proverbs makes most sense when you realize that it was written specifically to young men to warn them of the dangers of the world. It is telling them how to be wise, how to make a living, how not to fall into debt, how to marry the right woman. And then the writers begin to speak of wisdom, the wisdom of God. All the words they use are female. Wisdom is female. It gets lost in the English translation, but all the words in Hebrew about wisdom are female. The spirit that hovers, the wisdom through which God created the universe is named as female. When wisdom speaks, wisdom is a girl. Then I was beside him like a master worker or a child at play, and I was daily God's delight, rejoicing before God always, rejoicing in God's inhabited world, and delighting in the children of men. The story I want to tell you today isn't about gender, and it's not about male and female, but I want you to understand the nuance of the Hebrew language, which is very beautiful, so that we can talk properly about this story. When we read inclusive language versions of the Bible, they make some things more accessible. This is good. They also lose some things in the translation. When our inclusive translation says humanity, the original Hebrew uses an older word that means man, but it also means all people. Using the word man allows the writers to imply many things. Listen, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you established, what is man that you are mindful of him? And the Son of Man that you care for him. Yet you have made him a little lower than the angels and crowned him with glory and majesty. Now imagine that the writer of that psalm is King David, sitting alone under a sky filled with stars in the wilderness. He is between battles. He is alone, and he doesn't know what the following day holds. He doesn't know if he should be king or not. When I consider your heavens, the moon and the stars, What is man that you are mindful of him? What is man? What is humanity or human beings? What is this man? Who am I that you should be mindful of me? The beauty of the poetry catches all those questions in one phrase. It isn't meant to exclude half the population. It's meant to include both the one and the many. And to ask that great question of not just we as a great group, but of each of us. What is humanity? But also, who am I that God should be mindful of me? And the writer says, what is man that you are mindful of him? And the Son of Man that you should care for him? And the phrase, the Son of Man, is an ancient Hebrew phrase, and it doesn't mean a child, and it doesn't mean just any child. It usually means someone to whom God has given power, a judge, a great leader, a king, King David, someone who by his position represents the people before God, the heir to a relationship with God, and sometimes it means Messiah. Much later, Jesus uses that phrase to describe himself. What is humanity that God should be mindful of us? What is a man or a woman that God should be mindful of him or her? You can buy a lot of self-help books that ask kind of that last question, who am I? If you are on Facebook, you can take tests. You can find out which Game of Thrones character you are, which animal you are, which color you are, perhaps which Wizard of Oz character you are, and why you should change your life to better express your inner scarecrow. Yes, you can laugh, it's funny. But this is one of those questions that can't be answered by Google or Facebook. And this is the question we are asked every day, who am I? A question that is only ever answered for that day. In our ongoing, constant conversation with God. We don't usually think about our conversations with God as being constant. We think about prayer as set off in a particular time or worship on Sundays. But we are in constant conversation with God because we are engaged in an act of creation every day. We are being created every day. None of those questions about who we are ever answered once and forever. Who am I is really about who am I becoming today? How is God creating me today? Who am I in relationship with today? And when we are stuck thinking that who we are is already defined permanently and forever, then the conversation's going wrong and we find ourselves stuck. Shakespeare wrote about that at its most extreme. When a person's sense of identity is most threatened, they are unable to be in that holy conversation. And Hamlet, Shakespeare's great antihero, is unable to move. He has come to the point where he is unable to act. He has come to the point where his reason is almost gone. And he speaks these words, showing the clash between reason and self-absorption, the edge where the possibility of life is pushed aside by anger and the conversation has stopped. And he says, what a piece of work is man, how noble in reason, how infinite in faculties, in form and moving, how express and admirable, in action, how like an angel, in apprehension, how like a god, the beauty of the world, the paragon of animals, and yet to me, what is the quintessence of dust? Man delights not me. So often we look upon the world and man delights not me. Not the humanity that pollutes, not the humanity that wars, not the individual that calls forth hatred. And yet, God delights in man, in humanity, in woman. The spirit of wisdom is at play in the creation, calling us also to be at play. What a piece of work is man or woman? What a piece of work is humanity? What are we that God should be mindful of us? Our culture tells us that identity is fixed. Most difficult, our culture tells us that our identity is fixed by categories that other people have made. The people who are powerful in our lives demand of us. Tyrants have always used that idea that identity is fixed and forces us to choose between us and another. But who we are as people or as a person is always mutable, because who we are is always formed in relationship. That's why that relationship with God is so important. We do not have to constantly and forever identify ourselves as wrong in the way other people have defined us. We don't always and forever have to define ourselves as a particular ethnic group, white, powerful, or other. Who we are is formed in relationship. That's why the relationship with God is so, so important. You can survive the identities forced on you by unhealthy relationships if you can see yourself in God's eyes. And you can enhance yourself, your own way of being, and the identities of others if you can see them in God's eyes. You can grow into the identity that the Spirit calls you into if you are willing to see yourself in that relationship. For each day, God calls us to be and to become. For we are children of God who has created and is creating. Who we are is an identity formed in the land, grown in a cultural soil, watered by human relationship, sometimes twisted by human relationship, and ultimately dependent on the God in whom we live and move and have being, and with whom we are always in constant conversation. We are called to become, and we are called to become in joy. For man is surprisingly the delight of God and the possibility. So come and play. Come and play in the creation with the Spirit through whom creation was made. And each day, enter into that conversation with who you are to become through God. Amen.